The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Let's get into Mind Matters right here as we say good morning to Dr. Vernice Richards, their mental performance therapist who integrates clinical mental health, performance, psychology, and cognitive processing therapy to support high-performing professionals in sport, business, and the performing arts in unlocking their potential and ability to thrive under pressure. With an understanding of the unique challenges faced by high-functioning individuals, she guides clients through the complexities of high-functioning anxiety and depression using practical, actionable strategies grounded in her motto, learning never ceases. Dr. Richards empowers clients to cultivate awareness, curiosity, resilience, and sustainable mental performance that enhances both their professional success and personal well-being. So good morning to you and welcome.
Hello, good morning. Lovely to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Good morning. So, well, how is it that you decided to become a mental performance therapist?
That's an interesting question. And I think I get asked that question most often out of anything else. Like, what is that?
Yeah, what right? is that? That would be my next question. What is that really?
What does that even mean?
Yes. Right?
So I get blank stares, the dare and headlight look when anybody kind of like asks me a question. Like, oh, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And that's the result that I get. So mental performance therapy came about because of the way I've kind of like integrated human sciences, right? Mm-hmm. So I started my education in counseling, right? And then leaned into sport performance as an athlete myself, and then build upon that with clinical mental health, yoga therapy, and other human science narratives. Mm-hmm. So I was pressed with the way to integrate all of those things and put it in a package so that way I can use all of it. So mm-hmm. it's mental performance, but then also with a clinical and backed by research flair in therapy. That makes sense.
So it's combining the things that you love into one, along with
Correct.
Staying healthy and active.
Correct, yes. So it's all of the things all together. Mm-hmm. Like I'm a have your cake and eat it too kind of person. So that's essentially what happened there.
All right. So let's get to why bring together all of these different facets together, the clinical, mental health, performance, psychology, and cognitive processing therapy in your work. Why do that?
I think it's really looking at the whole person, right? Because like I said before, I started in counseling, went to sport, and then also clinical mental health. And you realize that the human mind is one of the most dynamic, one of the most unpredictable, one of the most studied organs that we have, right? Is the brain. Mm-hmm. And when we think about how dynamic that is, recognizing that people are more the sum of their parts versus the opposite. So it's not about just the performance or their symptoms, right? You're looking at the whole person. So I try to look at a 360 degree approach. So clinical mental health allows me to address like deep rooted issues like trauma or anxiety. Performance psych brings in the tools and mindset strategies. So when we look at working under pressure, and then cognitive processing therapy helps you untangle the stories that we tell ourselves and narratives that take us from day to day. Mm-hmm. So weaving them all together creates that model that kind of like keeps people performing at their best, whether it's in sport, in business, in life.
Mm. And how do you define high-functioning anxiety and what makes it so common among top performers in sport, business, and the arts?
So I think high-functioning anxiety is not something that we tend to talk about a whole lot. We talk about anxiety, and then we talk about high-functioning. We don't really talk about high functioning that much. That's another one that people tend to not define themselves by. But it's essentially that invisible engine that pushes someone forward, mm-hmm. right? But what we don't see is that it also quietly drains you at the same time. So somebody who has high functioning anxiety or even high functioning depression are the ones that are polished on the outside, productive, often admired for what they're able to get down, the strong friends, right? But it internally, there's a restlessness. They tend to overthink. They're plagued with perfectionism, and they tend to feel like nothing is ever enough. So people who perform well in any area, they tend to be especially vulnerable to succumbing to symptoms of high functioning anxiety, because the same traits that drive success is the same ones that make them maybe just not feel like 100%.
That is such a paradox. And it sounds like an oxymoron altogether, because to be at the top of whatever, be it sports, business, you have to be, you know, focused. Mm-hmm. Not so much depressed, but you know what I mean. It looks, as you said, it's the same traits, but I guess looked at differently.
Yeah. It's like almost like if it's run wild, mm-hmm. like and too much of anything is bad for you, right? Yeah. Too much salt in a pilau is not a good idea, right? So it is when you have too much of anything. So angst, for instance, anxiety is what we tend to use most often, is that sense of, you know, what more can I do? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you let that run wild, then you get anxious about what more can I do? And then depression or sad feelings is kind of like, okay, am I enough?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So then if you let that run wild, then you tend to feel you have the self-doubt, you have the imposter syndrome, you have all of these things, but it's just too much of any of it. So it's two sides of the same coin.
Mm. Mirrored kind of thing. Correct. What are some... Okay, so what are some overlooked signs of high-functioning depression or anxiety that people and even leaders tend to miss?
I think we kind of touched on that just slightly just then.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say always being busy, right? Like feeling like if you have to be go, 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 not being able to rest. Like there's something I like to call stress laxing. We tend to be those people that, you know, you want to relax. So you're sitting on the couch relaxing and you're thinking about all the things you should be doing,
mm-hmm.
be more productive. Like, I should be doing this. I should be doing that. I should be doing that. And then you wake up more exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So yeah. The stress and always being busy, always being on the go is one thing. This is a huge one. The inability to enjoy a success or a win. Right. And that's because your mind has like already moved on to what the next thing is. So it doesn't hit as well. You're always just like, okay, yeah, I did that, next thing. Okay, yeah, I did that, next thing. And then you have the people around you being like, dang, they're machines.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But it's because they don't know how to celebrate because it's not enough.
Mm.
Right. So leaders, performers in this area tend to hide behind productivity.
Okay.
And that's the problem. Yeah.
Is it also, would it have any role to play where persons don't acknowledge? Does that have a role to play in it?
Well, I mean, it's a perception thing too, right? So it's people who are perpetual students, of which I am, you get that first degree and you expect something magical to happen, right? And then you walk across the stage and nothing happens. So then you go for the next thing. You're just chasing that high, that productivity or that accomplishment high that you might not tend to actually realize.
Mm. Interesting. What are the practices do you usually, what practices do you personally use to maintain balance, resilience, and mental clarity in your own high-performance lifestyle?
Oh, so what do I do? I'd like to say I do all the things, but that would be a little white lie. Mm-hmm. I try to practice as many of the strategies and tools that I preach, right? Because I want to make sure that when performers who are doing the things in real world come to me and they say, okay, hey, this doesn't work, I want to be able to tell them why it does and why it doesn't. So I try to use that. Personally, though, I think boundaries are my biggest friend. So I am a huge supporter of work-life integration versus work-life balance, right? And that means that I take what I do at my work, what I do in my life, as seriously as possible. So my schedule, I'm a stickler with my schedule. When I turn off, I turn off. When I turn on, I turn on, right? I'm making sure that my boundaries are intentional.
Mm-hmm. And what mental performance challenges are unique to athletes compared to other high-functioning professionals?
with athletes, and I know we wanted to talk a lot about sport performance here, so I think this might be a good avenue to seg into that as well. But the difference with athletes and some of the other performance disciplines is that it's not only their mental fortitude or their intellectual fortitude that's tested by pressure, right? It's also their body. So injuries, aging, physical limits can threaten their identity in ways that, like an artist or a CEO or someone in a C-suite might not experience as sharply, right? They can sit at their desk and do the things, right? Because they rely more on their mental and intellectual versus the athlete. They've got a trifecta of things that they need to stay on board. Mm-hmm. So transitioning out of sport is a unique dynamic, right? When retirement can feel like a loss of self.
Mm.
But then in sport as well, public scrutiny. You know, we have the peanut gallery. The public scrutiny is relentless. Like, is everybody sitting in the stands telling them what they should be doing and how they should be doing it? So high performers in sport tend to have to battle those three core areas, which maybe doesn't apply to all performing professionals.
Well, you know, I automatically thought of the West Indies team when talking about sport, right? Mm-hmm. And you're talking about resilience and mental clarity. Is there anything
that we can do
to talk to the West Indies players to, you know, separate themselves? Because you made a very good point about the peanut gallery and those who swear that they can do better if it is they were given the opportunity to be in the team. How can you apply what you just talked about, the clinical mental health, for them so they will know how to separate and actually be on the pitch and, you know, almost like build up a wall so they don't hear these things?
Right. I think not hearing it is not the answer. Right. Because like we talked about before with high functioning, right, you have the two sides of that same coin. So you have the devil on one shoulder and you have the angel on the other. So it's about tuning into which one you want to hear louder than the other when you are in these situations. So as far as mental clarity, though, it's like if I do or if I don't, and what's most important here. So when we work on clarity, purpose, and those kinds of things, it's about getting obnoxiously specific about what you want to achieve on a given time. You know, some people call that goal setting, but I take it maybe a couple steps further into that, right? Where if we want to see something change or something different, we want to dial in as cleanly and as clearly as possible to what it is we really want to achieve as an individual, because, you know, cricket is an individual and team sport all at the same time, as an individual, but then also as a group. And getting on that page is what's going to be most important.
And having the common goal of actually winning a test series.
Well, yes. So we have a shared mental model. Mm-hmm. So everybody has their assignment. It's like that group assignment in school, right? Everybody has that assignment, and who's pulling their weight and who isn't. And if you aren't pulling your weight, then what is it, right? Mm-hmm. What is what is the thing that's going on beneath the surface, right? And this is where maybe some clinical mental health things comes in. What's going on beneath the surface that needs to be explored? This is also where some of the cognitive processing comes in. Like, what have you been told, right? Or what is the narrative that you believe that's keeping you from pulling your weight?
And all
right?
of those.
And then tying it all together.
Yeah.
So you see, this is another reason why, you know, it's called mental performance therapy. So there's like so many, and this is why it's exciting for me. I'm sure you can tell by the sound.
Yeah, I can tell. Yeah. And the next question is, so when you're going to start to work with the West Indies team?
I get very excited about it. Very, very excited.
All right. So are there any last tips for those who may not be a part of a sport, but somehow can see, you know, ferrying, where it could relate to everyday life? Do you have tips for us?
Like what we can do?
Yeah, what we can do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of my mottos, and I don't think it was in the bio, is that life is a sport, right? So it's learning to compete with yourself on a day-to-day, right? And not learning to compete with other people. So right now, the world is the biggest it's ever been, and it's also the smallest it's ever been. So it's easy for us to compare ourselves to other people who are living tangential lives, to us, you know, through Instagram, to TikTok, to all of the things, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are looking to increase your performance in life, right, that would be the first thing I would say to look through, right, is to see which parts of your life are you comparing yourself to someone else versus comparing yourself to yourself. Because mm-hmm. the only person you have to beat is you yesterday.
Yeah, very true.
Okay, and that would be my takeaway for sure. Like, I write things on my own mirror. Maybe that's something I could have said earlier when you asked me about my own strategies. I have mm-hmm. things written on all of my mirrors in those erasable pens, right, to remind myself. And what I try to remind everyone all the time is that it is all about you.
Mm. No, the thing is you could put those notes up and people will think you're going crazy, or what is all of this sticking all over the place? I like to say I have like mood boards or journals mm-hmm. that have a whole set of pictures and reference points. To say, okay, this is this point I'm at, and I want to get to the next point. And like, why are you always walking around with this book? What is that? You know?
Yeah.
So I guess you have to ignore or block out those kind of negative thoughts.
True. Or it might be an opportunity for you to teach someone. True. Right? Because if you are on a path of self-advancement, right, or increasing your dimensions, right? You're trying to do more for and from yourself. Then the best way to learn how to do that is to teach someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's like, you know, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And that's reinforcing for you, whether they pick up and they do it themselves or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I get, you know, like it kind of sounds a little like a little wishy-washy, a little airy-flairy, right? But when you're doing it on your own, then it only needs to make sense to you.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming and talking to us about this, Dr. Richards. And I really do hope that the teams out there hear your scope on things. And maybe, just maybe, we'll be, you know, celebrating again. But, you know, just being cheeky. Thank you so much for your time.
You are very welcome. Thank you so much for yours. And I hope this was helpful.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of the day and probably next week.
So here we go. Let's go.
Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.